It's Ideasphere with Scott Scrum, Rogue Traders.
Rogue Traders, for the individual investor out there, it's a great lesson of all the things that they did wrong that somebody could learn from. Currently, we are living with rogue traders. And do I expect that rogue trading events are going to stop? No, I do not. I hope that they do. I hope that my book brings education about what can go wrong.
Scandals on Wall Street have been a problem for decades. It's a question of ethics. Whether it's traders getting a millisecond jump on their competition, known as legalized front-running, hiding losses by hiding trade tickets, manipulating interest rates of the money markets, or excessive short-selling in the repo market. It's a reoccurring problem that won't go away. Hello, I'm Guy Rothbun. Welcome to Ideasphere, a platform for today's voices with one of the leading figures in the repo and securities finance markets today, Scott E.D. Scrum. In the book Rogue Traders, Scum examines the exploits of seven stockbrokers who used their talents to scam the system. But Scrum has a positive perspective. By examining the history of rogue traders, he says, investors can learn from the past and have a better chance of avoiding a repeat in the future. Mr. Scrum, thanks so much for joining me for this program.
Guy, I'm very happy to join you.
Interesting reading you've provided for us. I think it's valuable. The one thing we, that is society, tend to do, and you bring this out in your book, is generalize. So therefore we say, well, bankers are the problem. Wall Street's the problem. It's the whole industry is an issue. Well, it's not.
You know, I would certainly agree with you. And it's interesting, too, because my book, Rogue Traders, which just came out, it's available on Amazon right now. It was the first study, real study, on rogue traders, rogue Wall Street traders, generally traders in different financial markets who have taken significant losses and caused billions of dollars worth of losses at banks. And the whole phenomena hasn't really been looked at by anyone in any really good study.
It's disappointing because you'd think someone like yourself, spending the time to look back on the characteristics of the David Hewitters and Drysdale and so many others, they would recognize a certain trend and therefore be able to avoid it in the future. And it just seems like the banks end up setting themselves up in the name of monetary gain.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And what's really interesting, too, is that rogue traders and rogue trading losses have really only been around since the 1980s. There were effectively no real rogue trading losses before then. And basically, you'll see this, and it's well put forth in my book, is that, and in the book, what I do is I trace all total. There's been $66.3 billion in rogue traders since the beginning of the 1980s, and basically nothing before then. So what's changed since the beginning of the 1980s? And this is one of the main premises of my book, is that before the 1980s, most Wall Street firms, most Wall Street banks were set up as private partnerships. They were generally owned by the people that worked there. They were owned by the people that manage the companies. But beginning in the 1980s, the whole system kind of changed so that previously there was a great incentive system in the banking industry so that people would take conservative risks and not take large losses, and they would manage their risks. However, in the 1980s, a lot of these firms became public. So Salomon Brothers, Merrill Lynch, Morgan Stanley, all these firms which had been private partnerships, became public companies in the 1980s. And that changed the whole system, because then the traders at these firms were now playing with other people's money instead of their own money.
No skin in the game, so they can take bigger risks.
Absolutely. And the whole compensation system was turned upside down, where you had an incentive, if you were an employee risk taker at a bank, to take large risks, because if you made a lot of money, you got paid a really large bonus. But if you lost a lot of money, all you lost was your job. And then what also happened, too, was that if you had taken a large loss, you accumulated a reputation as a really big swinging Wall Street trader, in which case you ended up getting second, third, and even fourth jobs after taking a loss because everybody knew your name and your reputation as a big swinging trader.
So eventually the idea was that you'd strike properly.
Exactly. You keep taking large risks, and at some point, you're going to hit a home run, and you're going to be paid a lot of money.
Exactly.
And that was kind of the system in the 1980s. And a lot of times you might think that the system would correct itself. However, it didn't. Basically, in the 1990s, all these public Wall Street investment banks were accumulated by commercial banks, which became global banks. So now you had the same incentive structure of taking large risks to get large bonuses, but now it was a global business with billions of dollars worth of capital behind you, and you can take multiple times the risk. And what you'll see is, as you go through the 1980s, 1990s, and 2000s, is that the losses accumulated and grew with the size of the institutions. And the commercial bankers that were trying to manage these traders globally just were not prepared for the risks and new markets. They just really didn't understand all the new financial instruments that were being cranked out by Wall Street.
And then you have the issue of oversight. There was none for many of these rogue traders. No one was there making sure they were doing an ethical piece of work. It was a matter of what is the income you have this week?
Yes, you know, Guy, that's a really good point. And to some extent, my book, Rogue Traders, it's a history of Wall Street over the past 30 years. So there's a lot of different financial markets that are discussed in the book. And I structured each chapter on a different rogue trader. There's seven different rogue traders in the book that are spread out from the 1980s through today. And I go through different markets where rogue trader losses occurred. There's the repo market, mortgage-backed securities, futures market, treasury securities, natural gas, stock index futures, and LIBOR. So to some extent, rogue traders is a discussion of the evolution of the financial markets over the last 30 years. But then also to some extent too, the first chapter of my book, which you mentioned, David Huiter and Drysdale, was the first major rogue trading event. And one of the principal parts of my chapter is that it was a completely unregulated market system at that point. And because of Drysdale, in 1986, the U.S. government passed additional regulation to basically start regulating and having oversight for financial markets, which it didn't even have before.
Well, this is something I think is going to catch the eye of many of your readers who are not savvy with the market itself. We sit back and wonder, now, how can this happen again? How can 2008 be a repeat of 1999? How can the savings and loan of the 1980s fail, and yet we do not make the changes? What we don't realize is that the rogue traders are able to get in and find the loopholes or the ways around new regulation.
You know, and not just new regulation, but also risk management systems at the banks where they work. Hey, here's a great example. Jerome Kerviel of Societe General Bank, operating out of Paris. In 2007, he was taking enormous risks in European stock index futures. And basically, Jerome Kerviel started losing money on his positions. But Jerome Kerviel had an ace in his back pocket, basically, because Jerome Kerviel had started in the back office and middle office at Societe General Bank. So he knew the trade processing system. He knew the risk management system. So he knew when all those reports were run. So here's what Jerome Kerviel did in 2007 to hide his losses. He knew that the bank processed their risk reports at 5 o'clock p.m. every day. So right before 5 o'clock, he would input trades to cover his losses. And then right after 5 o'clock p.m., he would delete those trades. So for the risk reports, it showed that basically he had covered his losses and he wasn't losing any money. But for clearing the securities or settling the securities or for the management, they didn't see the trades because they had been inputted and deleted. So there are some very clever people out there who had taken losses, and they had found ways to cover up their losses. And at the same time, you have all these banks that are managed by commercial bankers, and they had no idea what was going on, you know, just a few desks away from them.
In case you're just tuning in, talking with Scott Skyrm, S-K-Y-R-M, Rogue Traders and Insiders Look at the Real Bad Boys of Wall Street in Softcover. You have a website, blog, and Twitter, and anything else you want to promote?
Oh, yes, I do, Guy. I have a website, www.scottskyrm.com, which is S-K-Y-R-M. I publish weekly market commentaries on my website, and the sign-up list is for free. I also have a Twitter account, which is at Scott Skyrm, S-C-O-T-T-S-K-Y-R-M. And I go through the daily financial news and comment on my views of what's going on in the financial markets. So I can be followed on my website or on Twitter.
Well, since you mentioned what's happening now and you follow Wall Street, setting aside your book for just a moment, The Rogue Traders, let's also look at what the market is doing. There's many now saying the market is ripe for a correction. In fact, I was reading in the Motley Fool advisory post, and they were saying that the correction is already underway.
Guy, in terms of the stock market, which is generally how most people view Wall Street and the finance industry, I would say right now where we are in the stock market, you have the Dow Jones in the mid-16,000s. We're close to the all-time highs. We have an economy that's moving along slowly, but the employment reports are still pretty sluggish. So in general, a lot of the economic news has been good, and that's been the case the last couple of years. The new regulation that has hit the markets through Dodd-Frank and Basel III over in Europe, a lot of the rules have been written, and they're being finalized right now. So that's a good thing, and I think waiting for the new regulation to be finalized really slowed down the markets over the past couple of years. But basically, what the key factor, if you look at one thing that's going to determine where the stock market goes over the next couple of years, it's going to be the employment report. So basically, once we start making more jobs in the economy, our economy is going to start taking off again. So in my mind, it's a matter of when. It's not a matter of if. And when we start creating more jobs, it's going to have a lot of other effects that are going to ripple through the economy. And I think at some point over the next couple of years, we're going to have a strong economy and a strong stock market. But it all hinges on when employment starts to pick up again.
You mentioned Society General. You used to work for them many years ago.
Yes, I worked for a subsidiary of Society General Bank. That's correct.
And in that time, were you familiar with some of these rogue traders and watching their actions from the sidelines?
Well, it's interesting because I had met the first rogue trader in my book, David Hewitter, when I was very young, with a lot of the other rogue traders. One of them, Nick Leeson, I have corresponded with some of the other rogue traders in my book. I have not met them or spoken with them, but I actually have a lot of access to people who worked with them. So, for example, my book last year, which was called The Money Noose, John Corzine and the Collapse of MF Global, which basically told the story of what happened at MF Global. It was very, for the typical investor, it was very hard to understand repo to maturity trades, missing seg funds. And what I do in my book is I go through a great effort to explain complicated Wall Street things, for lack of a better word, in really plain language. So the Money News book and how successful that was actually opened up a lot of doors for me. So for example, with Howie Rubin and Merrill Lynch, I spoke with somebody who worked right with them and had some good insight as to the inside story of what was going on there. For Joe Jett and Kidder Peabody, rogue trader in 1994, I spoke with people who worked with him also. For Jerome Kerviel and Society General Bank, since I worked at the institution, I knew several people who had some interesting information about Jerome Kerviel and with the LIBOR market. And it's interesting, my book is actually the first explanation of the LIBOR rigging scandal, which happened a couple years ago.
Yes.
And I really laid out exactly what happened in LIBOR rigging scandal very well. mainly because that was one of my main markets. When I was in my career, I've been a Wall Street trader, I've been a Wall Street salesman, I've been a Wall Street trading desk manager. And in the markets where I operated, I was in the repo market, in money markets, in treasury securities. So the LIBOR chapter actually occurred basically in the money markets, the CDs. So I had a lot of great insight as to how that market really works. And I was able to tell the story like an insider could.
Well, the insider situation you had with Huebner is that he offered you a job.
Yes, it's interesting because the company where David Huebner operated, Drysdale Securities, my father had worked for Drysdale several years previously. And I had had an annual visit, or I went into work with my father around Christmas time every year. I would wake up early in the morning, ride the train with him into his office and spend the day with him at work. A great thing that I would recommend for any adult who wants to teach their children about working life and what it's like. And when my father was working at Drysdale about 5 years before the Rogue Trading event in around 1977, I met David Huebner, and he asked me some questions about how I was doing in school and whether I was good at math, and I tended to be naturally pretty good at math. After a couple more questions, he said, well, when you're old enough, why don't you come over here and I'll give you a summer job? And I said, I'd be happy to. And what's really interesting was, had I taken that summer job when I was old enough, it would have been right about the time when David Huebner had gone bust and Drysdale went bankrupt. So I actually could have been sitting at Drysdale Securities at the time.
How close you came.
Yeah.
On that point of Huebner and the work at Drysdale, he was doing something that had not been done before. He was working in a brand new market, the repro that you had mentioned, the trades there. But that's a characteristic you found with every one of these rogue traders. This was a new tool, a new avenue. So no one knew the course, the chart. It was uncharted.
You know, Guy, that's a really great insight that you're illustrating here, is that many times, most of the time, rogue trading and rogue trading losses occur in new markets. So, for example, in 1982, the repo market, which is short for repurchase agreement, and it's not a financial instrument that a lot of people are familiar with, but over the years, as that market has developed, it's the market that provides all these banks and financial institutions with the leverage, with the short-term funding they need to accumulate larger and larger positions and leverage themselves. So really, when you go back to Drysdale in 1982, it was the whole dawn of the repo market and when the market really started. And you can trace the leverage at these banks back to that exact point in time where there was a market that was unregulated, that nobody was sure about the legal aspects of the market. And David Huebner found a way to take advantage of that.
As so many others did as well, it's rampant throughout the work. Rogue Traders is the title of the book. It's now available in softcover. Scott E.D. Skrum, that's S-K-Y-R-M. His website, scottskrum.com. If you're just tuning in and would like to hear this program in its entirety, you can do so a couple of ways at Public Radio Exchange, prx.org, or podcast at National Public Radio, npr.org. This is Ideasphere, a platform for today's voices. We'll be right back.
This is KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. Up next, it's The Splendid Table, followed by that at 3 o'clock, it's Fresh Air. And at 4 o'clock, it's Marketplace. This is KCBX.
Welcome back to Ideasphere, a platform for today's voices. With one of the leading figures in the repo and securities financing markets today, Scott Scrum. He's highly regarded as a former trader, salesman, trading desk manager, and global business head in fixed income. Worked on Wall Street for over 22 years. His book, Rogue Traders. One of the interesting things we have, and I think this is going to help readers with your work, is you state that if you want to know more about the market, follow the work of the rogue traders. You don't put it exactly that way, but we have a lot to learn from them investment strategy-wise.
You know, Guy, that's really interesting because it's really one of the premises for why rogue traders are important for the individual investor. And let me tell you a little story. Back after I graduated from college and started my first job at the Bank of Tokyo, I started as an assistant, getting traders coffee and running errands, whatever they wanted me to do. At some point, I became a junior trader on the government bond repo desk. And at some point around in the early 1990s, I was given my own trading account. And that meant that I could trade the bank's capital, the bank's money, and try to make money doing that. And then right before I started trading my own trading account, my boss came to me and said, the first thing you're going to do is lose money. I said, what?
Yeah.
You're giving me a trading account and you expect me to lose money. He basically said, yes, because what's going to happen when you start trading is that you're going to learn what not to do. So you're going to learn that when you're doing trades, you should put stop losses on trades. You should not take losses. You should let your winnings run. All the trading 101 principles that you learn about in every book on trading and investing. And basically, he knew that I was going to lose money at first, but he knew that I would learn from that. So when you take that back to the rogue trader stories, is that all these rogue traders did something wrong. They made mistakes, and they generally tried to cover them up. And rogue traders, for the individual investor out there, it's a great lesson of all the things that they did wrong that somebody could learn from.
Well, something that the average listener is going to inquire about too is, and I'm glad you bring this out in your book, how is it some of these rogue traders who lose so much money for a company, and in some cases bringing the company down, they stay in Wall Street? The difference being, of course, that they were not convicted of a crime, but they could have been.
Right. Well, it's interesting. In my book, Rogue Traders, this is going to be my first book on rogue traders. There will be a second book, okay. No doubt about that. And I'm already working on it. In this particular book, there's seven different rogue traders that account for 19 odd billion dollars in terms of losses. And there's another 40 or so billion dollars worth of rogue trader losses out there, too. And those stories still have yet to be told. In my current book, the first book on rogue traders, David Huidor was arrested and he was put on trial and he spent time in prison. Howard Rubin, who was a rogue trader at Merrill Lynch and mortgage-backed securities, it's interesting, Howard Rubin was accused of being a rogue trader by Merrill Lynch, but he was never officially charged about it. So Howard Rubin was actually a rogue trader who took losses, but you know, did he anything that defrauded the institution that they didn't know he was taking losses? That was somewhat debatable, but he was never officially charged with anything. So, you know, he was a rogue trader, but he was never convicted of being a rogue trader. And he has gone on to have a very prosperous Wall Street trading career since then. When you look at Nick Leeson, he's very famous. There is a book that he wrote called Rogue Trader, and a movie made about his book, Rogue Trader. He spent time in the Singapore prison. Brian Hunter, who was a rogue trader for a hedge fund named Amaranth, who lost $6.6 billion trading natural gas in 2006. Brian Hunter, when he left Amaranth after his loss, he went up to Canada, and he was never charged with anything, being that the institution, the hedge fund where he worked, the CEO of the hedge fund knew what he was doing the whole time. So he was never charged nor convicted. Jerome Kurvial is an interesting case because Jerome Kurvial has been in the news recently. Jerome Kurvial was tried and convicted of defrauding Society General Bank. He was originally sentenced to 5 years in prison. He was sentenced to pay back Society General Bank for his losses, which were basically over $7 billion. Jerome Kurvial's sentence was reduced to 3 years in prison, which he is about to begin serving his sentence. I've also heard that there's going to be a movie made about Jerome Kurvial, which is supposed to come out next year. With the LIBOR trading scandal, Tom Hayes of LIBOR is currently in the process of being charged, and that situation has not been finalized. So it'll be interesting to follow and see what happens to Tom.
One of the names you don't mention in this book, and readers are going to be curious why, I think I know, but let me see if I can guess correctly. Bernie Madoff. His was primarily a pyramid scheme.
Yes, and I stayed away from the Bernie Madoff story, mainly because there's a lot of news about it, and it's been written about a lot. So I didn't feel like I had to really tell that particular story, although there were significant losses related to Bernie Madoff. But at this point, I felt that I wouldn't necessarily bring any great new insight. However, for the next book, you know, there was a rogue trading scandal that just hit 2 years ago, and that was the London Whale. The London Whale will be in the next book, yes. And I'm just working on that chapter right now.
Okay, let's sum it up here. I like the way you say it. It's probably a long-term reference, but I had never heard it before. If you're in the room with investors and you can't spot the fool, then you're probably the fool.
Yes, that's a great quote. And, you know, one of the important things to learn about rogue traders, and there's a great quote from a philosopher 100 years ago, which is basically summarized, if you don't learn from your mistakes, you're bound to repeat them. So the person who is going to do well in the financial markets, who's going to do well as an individual investor, that's the person that's going to learn from other people's mistakes, and that's the person who's not going to be the fool in the room.
So we live with the rogues.
Currently, we are living with rogue traders. And do I expect that rogue trading events are going to stop? No, I do not. I hope that they do. I hope that my book brings education about what can go wrong, and it will help the financial markets, and it'll help individual investors. But I just have this feeling in the back of my mind that there will continue to be rogue trading events which happen over the next few years.
Well, it's been a pleasure speaking about this. I thank you so very much.
Guy, this has been great. I really enjoyed discussing my book and rogue traders and listening to all your questions.
Let's see if we can team up again with the second rogue traders book.
That would be my pleasure.
Mine as well. My guest for this broadcast, Scott E.D. Scrum. Check out his website at scottscrum.com. Last name spelled S-K-Y-R-M. If you have any questions about these broadcasts or suggestions for future shows, write to me at rathbunproductions@gmail.com. This program is a distribution of Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org. For Ideasphere, I'm Guy Rathbun.